Okay. Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Mem Tes in Becharos. We're back. We're in the bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Beis, and we have a mission to start. Before we start the mission, just one point I want to make from yesterday. And we're going to see this later this morning as well. The idea of writing a harsha one to another, right? Basically, it's power of attorney, where I can collect on your behalf. The reason why I'd want to do that in certain situations, we'll give a good example later on this morning, is simply because right now I myself can't really make a collection. I can make a collection in conjunction with you. You and I together can collect. Again, the case will be clear later on this morning. And the Gemara says that you can write a harsha. You're allowed to write a power of attorney so that I can come now and not only represent myself, but represent my friend as well. And the power of the two of us together combined can now collect whatever obligation we need to collect. The Gemara says that's only true if it's hukra ulevesof nisarvu. That's only true if it was recognized and then the two got mixed up together. But if the two got mixed up together at the inception, which is what we were dealing with yesterday, so then you cannot write a harsha. The question on the table is why not? But the answer is pretty straightforward, and this is where we left off yesterday. Because I can write power of attorney on behalf of somebody else, so I can use somebody else's power of attorney and collect on the two of us, if both of us know that there's an obligation that's in existence, and then for whatever reason, confusion then ensued. But at least I knew at one point in time, I was obligated the money. However, in the case where there was confusion from the very beginning, where we do not know from the very inception who was owed the money, so then you cannot write harsha, you cannot write power of attorney, simply because neither him or me can definitively say at any point in time, I was owed the money. Okay, you don't fully understand that, that's fine, because later on this morning we're going to get to a case in the Mishnah and the Gemara where you're going to see exactly this play out. So, kind of like an introduction to later on this morning. Ezu b'chol anachla ula kohen. Okay, we're on to the Mishnah. The Mishnah now discusses, give me an example of b'chol anachla ula kohen. Now, the simple case, of course, right? The simple case, of course, is where you have a firstborn. All right. Again, you know, the Mishnah doesn't want to give us a simple case because that's no chiddush. That's the mitzvah haTorah that we have a firstborn. Yeah, there's a pigeon a ben. So, what would be an example where it's a b'chol anachla ula kohen amapel shpir male mayim? So let's say her first miscarriage was really not a viable fetus at all, meaning it was a sack filled with water. Male dama was a sack filled with blood. Male ganunim, it's a sack filled with liquids that had many different colors. Clearly, and whatever we're describing over here, I'm not even sure, but point is that it's not a fetus. It's not a fetus at all, and so therefore, what comes out next is going to be Peter Rechem. It will be the first thing, the first child, I should say, that comes out of her. So Hamapels kim indagim v'chagav v'shkatzim v'ramasim v'hamapels liyom arba'im habachrim b'chol nachal l'kohen. Then the Mishnah gives a couple of other examples. Let's say she gives birth to something that's so disfigured and so not human looking. It looks like a fish, it looks like a grasshopper. Okay, I know all this sounds strange. When we get to Masech Tanida, we're going to be talking about similar scenarios as well. Point being, again, the point is very simple. It's not a fetus. It's not considered a viable fetus. It's not Peter Rechem. The next thing that comes out of her would, in fact, be her firstborn child vis-a-vis Nachla, vis-a-vis Bechora, Cohen. Hamapels liyom arba'im. She has a miscarriage on the 40th day. We have a general principle, it's true throughout all of Shas, that gestation from conception to day 40, it's maya ba'alma. It's not a fetus. Okay, I know it touches on a lot of practical application, right, in terms of vis-a-vis in terms of abortion, vis-a-vis in terms of can you be mechal Shabbos, to save that, you know, that very, very early stage fetus. In scientific terminology, they refer to it as a zygote, I believe. But okay, so it touches on other halachas as well. We're not going to deal with the other halachas. We're just going to deal with this halachic ramification for the mitzvah of Bechor. If she has a miscarriage at the very, very early stage, from conception to day 40, okay, how did they know exactly what day conception was? Fair question. I'm not really sure what the answer would be. But if you, let's just deal with more abstract. If you know that the miscarriage took place any time before day 40, up to day 40, that's not considered a fetus at all. It's not considered petarechem. The next baby that comes out will be petarechem. Habacharehem, b'chor nachla ula kohen. Yosei dofen, cesarean. The first baby comes out, cesarean. Okay, my firstborn was cesarean. So yosei dofen v'haba acharav shneim eina b'chor lola nachla v'lola kohen. So the Tanna Kamma says that nothing for the cesarean baby and nothing for the baby that comes out after the cesarean, meaning neither of them will be a bechor lanachla nor a bechor lekohen. Now bechor lekohen, right, petarechem, meaning that we understand, right? In other words, in order for there to be a responsibility pidgin aben, so it has to be a natural birth, petarechem, says the Torah. It has to come out through her rechem. And this is cesarean. Bechor lanachla, interesting. Bechor lanachla, it is your firstborn. It's your firstborn issue. It's right. Why wouldn't there be a bechor lanachla? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that very question. The Gemara will give an answer to that question. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon lanachla v'ashen l'chamish layim. And Rabbi Shimon, so he splits. He bifurcates. So what Rabbi Shimon says is like this: the cesarean that comes out, that's your firstborn, vis-a-vis nachla, meaning for the Yerusha. He's going to get pishtayim. He's your firstborn, right? Ki hu reishis ono. Again, the criteria in terms of what is a b'chol anachla just simply is contingent on the father's first issue. This is the father's first issue. As far as b'chol lekohen is concerned, the next child is petarechem. So what Rabbi Shimon does is a natural split between the first and the second. Okay. Risho lanachla lo, v'yaldu lo b'inan. Okay, so the Gemara now is going to try to help us understand the position of the Tanna Kamma. The Rishon is not a b'chor lanachla. Why not? Because the Torah says v'yaldu lo b'inan. Even in terms of b'chor lanachla, you need a leida. You need a natural birth. Cesarean is not considered natural, even though the baby's healthy, God, Baruch Hashem. And you can even have babies after your cesarean. I told you the Rambam has an interesting position, which, if we knew the science and medicine of his time, I'm sure it's very defendable, right? I'm a question against the Rambam, me and my family. But the Rambam says after cesarean, the mother will not survive. Mother does not survive after cesarean birth. Period.
I wouldn't want to have a cesarean back then myself.
Right. So the baby will survive, but the mother will not. That is the Rambam writes that. The Rambam writes Perush Mishnayos. It's somewhere here in the Perush Mishnayos for Bechoros. I'll do the research afterwards. I'll give you the exact Mishnah which he comments on that. So, okay. Baruch Hashem. I had a couple after my first. More than a couple. But my first was cesarean. So I'm a kasha on the Rambam. Rishon lanachla lo, so v'yaldu lo banim, so v'yaldu lo be'ina. So you need leida for the halacha of Yerusha of inheritance. L'chamish laim nami lo petarechem be'ina. And as far as the five salam responsibility requirement to give to the Kohen, but that also, same story. Petarechem, and the first one was not petarechem. Sheini lanachla lo, now, let's go on to that second child. Again, this is all an analysis of the Tanna Kamma. Second child, no. Why not? Because Reish Yisono Beinan. So because he's not your first issue, right? In other words, the first one is not the Bechor Lanachla on a technicality. It didn't come out via Leida. Second one is not Reish Yisono. So L'cham Yishlaim Nami Lokas Avar Bechor L'Davar Echa Lo Havi Bechor. Yeah, but according to the Tanna Kamma, why doesn't that first one have that, is a Bechor Lekohen? He is Petarechem, okay? Has nothing to do with Reish Yisono, it has to do with Petarechem. That second child, the first one came out via cesarean. Second child is Petarechem, so why doesn't that second child? So, Kasavar Bechor L'davar Echa Lo Havi Bechor. Because that's a one-sided Bechor. Tanna Kamma does not believe in a one-sided Bechor. Meaning you're either a Bechor or you're not. So the Tanna Kamma believes that since you are, even though it's true, you're Petarechem, but since you are not the firstborn, you write for Yerusha, so therefore you're not. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, Arish l'nachal v'shen l'chamishlaim. Now, that's all the Tanna Kamma. Now we turn to Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon's easy. Well, once you know Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon becomes easy. Rabbi Shimon Latame, the Amar, Taylor, the Rabbis, Yotze Dauphin. First of all, Rabbi Shimon holds that a cesarean birth is considered a birth. Cheetahs Rabbi Shimon. Okay? When we get to Nida, you'll see that again in Nida, right? If you can remember, from now till Nida, it's going to be about 6 months. All right, not so bad. Right about 6 months.
So,
yeah, it'll be summertime. But if you can remember, Nida Daf Mem, Rabbi Shimon holds that cesarean is considered a birth. Good. So that means then that the first one is a Bechor L'Nachala. That's easy. And then you get on to the next child. The next child now is the first one that comes out naturally out of the mother. Good. So that's a Bechor L'Kohen. You now are obligated to give five slime to the Kohen. But that second one is not your Bechor L'Nachala. Fine. Rabbi Shimon's fine with that. Rabbi Shimon holds that a Bechor L'Davar Echad is still considered a Bechor. Okay? That is the, that's your opinions of the morning. What do we hold? Very practical, right? Many people have cesareans, not a majority, but certainly a number of people, myself included. So we hold like the Tanna Kamma. A Yotzei Dofen, and that which comes out afterwards, is not a Bechor, neither for Nachla nor for Kahuna. Okay, so I got a break on the five saline. Although when I put my kids in school and they asked me for tuition, I told them, you know, he came out cesarean, it didn't matter. We start with the Mishnah. One, the Mishnah Memches Amanal Mishlo Bachra Ishto V'Yalda Shnei Zecharim Nosin Heislaim LeKohen. Okay, we're gonna get used to the scenarios over here. We're gonna deal with a number of scenarios where after the birth, a little bit of a mix up in the hospital. So, but we'll start off with nice, easy cases. So, your wife now has not given birth yet. And she gave you birth to two twin boys. So no sin, hey, slime, look, and you don't know which one was the firstborn, meaning a little bit of a mix-up in the hospital. Okay? I don't quote me on this, even though it's on tape and it's going to end up going online and everyone can hear it internationally, but don't quote me on this. But I always wonder, like, you know, my first set are not identical. I kind of know which one's which, but that second set, so they look so similar to one another. Like, are we sure that the one that, you know, we now know as, you know, is that the same? But anyway, but the, okay, but in other words, so the two twin boys are born. You don't know which one is now your firstborn. There was a little bit of mix-up in the hospital. It's fine. Meaning, it's not fine. I mean, you know, there's emotional issues. But, you know, but from a halachic standpoint, you owe the Kohen, five salayim, right? Plain and simple. Even though you can't point to which one's the Bechor, but you know one of them is a Bechor, the Kohen knows one of them is a Bechor, so you owe five slime to the Kohen. Meisechem mehem, besoch shoshim yom, ha'av pater. Now, Rachman v'litzlan, one of them dies within the first 30 days. The obligation to give five slime does not begin until day 30. Day 31, we'll talk more about that later. But the obligation does not begin until day 30, meaning up until that point in time, there is no obligation. God forbid one of those children dies within the first 30 days, so now the obligation is off. That child is not considered a viable child. The child is considered a nafel. Consequently, you will be exempt from having to pay for that five slime. In this scenario, one of those two die. You don't know which one it was that was the Bechor. Hamotzi mechaver al avaraya. The Kohen comes to you. You say to the Kohen, look, I don't know which one was the Bechor. I don't know if the Bechor died or not. So, and now you have to bring proof positive that that one that died was not the Bechor. You don't know for sure. I'm Motzim Echaver Olav Raya. Mesa Ava Banim Kayamim. Okay, let's flip. The children survived. Again, neither of them knowing which one is the Bechor. And the father dies, Rachman al Tzlan. Now, we don't know whether the father dies within the first 30 days or after the first 30 days. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to discuss that. But right now, let's just keep it plain and simple. Father dies. Rav Meir Omri, im nasnu ashalo chilku, nasnu v'im lav peturim. Rav Meir says like this. If before, there's an estate now. If they give from the estate before the division of the estate, so then what's done is done, meaning the Kohen now can hold on to his five salayim. However, if they divide the estate, so now each one now is rightful heir and owner of his 50% of the estate. Now, I say 50% because, remember, we don't know which one is the Bechor, so neither of them can actually claim, you know, I get a double portion. Okay, so fine. So each one of them now has their 50%. Once each has attained and acquired their 50%, so now the Kohen look comes over to them, knocks on the door, and they say to the Kohen, no, no, we're not going to give you. And for the simple reason that, well, you're coming after me, but I don't know if I'm the Bechor, so go to my brother. And the brother now will make the same argument to the Kohen.
Are they going to have to put the money aside till the Yor comes?
No.
It's a woman at the middle of the subject.
But
that extra part.
Okay, but I'm Otsi Mechaver Al Avaraya. They are right.
Between the two brothers, that's my
difference. Yeah, but they divided now. The estate's been divided. Okay, there's much more to discuss about this. I know it sounds a little bit funny, and I know there's going to be more discussion coming up about this case.
How can they divide before they finish the obligation of the father?
Right.
They have to put five slime and then divide.
Right. Okay, so fine. So, and it's interesting because Rav Meir makes it sound like, you know, if they give to the Kohen, it almost sounds like they don't have to, according to Rav Meir. Okay, again, stay tuned.
Rav,
for what? For a firstborn?
Yeah.
Well, because the obligation principally is on the father. So in other words, I understand that he can't point right now to who the firstborn is, but he knows he has an obligation. It's not principally on the child, although if the father fails to give, so then the child then has to pick up the slack. But principally the obligation is on the father. So that means that as long as he has a firstborn, even if he can't point to it, the obligation exists and he has to pay. Don't you have to? I mean, in the way we do it, yeah. In other words, you'd like to point to the Bechor and say, you know, I'm redeeming this, but even if you can't do that, it's an obligation. It's a chov. Principally, primarily, it is an obligation, right? The idea, you know, when we ceremonialize it, which it's a month, it's a mitzvah. Meaning, first and foremost, it's a mitzvah. But in the mitzvah, the way we do it, it almost sounds like, you know, I'm giving you five for this, but that's not the way to view it. Meaning from the Mishnah standpoint, the way to view it, first and foremost, it's an obligation. It's a monetary obligation on the father. Once you look at it that way, I got to tell you, then the rest of today's Gemara is going to flow wonderfully.
Well, it's obvious because if a child died, let's say, you're not the Bechor, you died after, let's say, 30 seconds.
Right.
So you
still has to give. Correct. Phil's point is very well taken. And in fact, we're going to learn that later this morning in the Mishnah. Now, again, remember the cases. Father had twin boys. They got mixed up. He doesn't know which one's which. And then the father dies. Okay, so a mayor says once the estate has been divided amongst the brothers, so they simply say to the Kohen, I'm really sorry. You're not getting anything. Rav Yehuda Omer, Nischayv Nechasim. And Rav Yehuda says, no. The Nechasim, the estate, is still obligated. The Kohen has a lien against the estate. And the father's estate, even though they divided, they're still obligated. Okay, again, stay tuned, because there's a lot of discussion about this point of the Mishnah. Zachar unekeva in kan lakohen klum. Let's say the father, instead of having twin boys, had twins, boy and girl, and they get mixed up. And we now don't know which one came out first. So the boy came out first, the girl comes out first. So, pater. So, in kan lakohen klum. Kohen doesn't get anything. Again, I'm mostly mechaver al avaraya, because now the argument has to be, not the argument, the fact has to be the boy came out first. We don't know that to be the case. Mixed up in the hospital. We just simply don't know which one came out first. Right? They didn't tie the red string around the hand as the first baby came out. Okay, now, we will spend the remainder of this sugya on that case of the Mishnah in which the father dies. Okay? That case of the Mishnah is the most complex, the most interesting, and it's fraught with just a lack of information. Meaning, when did the father die exactly? Mishnah doesn't tell us. All we know is that the Mishnah had twin boys, and boys got mixed up. We don't know which one's the firstborn, and then the father dies. Demisa av ema. So the first question the Gemara wants to know is, when did the father die? Ilem demisa achar lamed yom bahamer amer ki chalku peturim vayishtab in luhun lenechzai. So the Gemara says if dad dies after day 30, so he has an obligation, which then translates to a lien against his property. So you know how liens work. Even if the father dies, there's still a lien on the property. So even though now it's an estate to the next generation, but there's a lien against that property. And even if the children divide that property, there's still a lien against that property. So the Gemara is simply saying, I can't imagine we're talking about a case where the father dies after day 30, so then let's go to our next option. Dad dies within the first 30 days. So, but if dad dies within the first 30 days, that means that there is no lien against the property. And so now the only thing the Kohen has going for him is simply his claim against the Bechor. But who is the Bechor? We don't know. So he goes to each one of the sons and he says, give me my 5 salaim. And the son says, well, look, I'm really sorry. I'd love to help you. I don't even know if I'm the Bechor. My friend, I didn't even get the double portion. Right? I don't know if I'm the Bechor. Why don't you go to my brother? And of course, the brother's going to give him the same story. Again, all this is, in other words, we don't have to go through the storyline, but you understand, each son is just going to say, take the position, I don't know if I owe you. And truth be told is that this would be the conclusion even before they've divided the estate. Because his claim now is no longer against the father. His claim now is against them, but they don't know which one of them is the Bechor.
Neither of them got the double portion?
Nope. Okay, so I'm Rav Yirmiyah. Zos Omeris, Shnei Yosef ben Shimon, Shayu Be'iracha. So Rav Yirmiyah says, you know what? We're going to take this case and we're going to turn it into now a broader monetary rule. And Rav Yirmiyah says, look, let's say, for example, Zosem Eshnei Yosef Ben Shimon, Shayu Bir Echas. Okay, let's say you have a loan outstanding. Now, we do a better job in terms of identifying who people are because we have something called the last name. Okay, it's exciting, right? And how many Sugarmans are out there in the world? So there really aren't that many. I know there's a Rabbi Marvin Sugarman in California because every time somebody sees me, he says, oh, Rabbi Sugarman out in California. I say, no. I know him, I heard of him, we're not related. And I also know that there is a Sugarman out in Eretz Yisrael, up in the north. Oh, yeah? No, we're not. Yeah, I saw that one as well.
You have to search Google.
Why
did
you pronounce Sugarman? It should be German.
So it was. It's very simple, because we weren't Sugarman. When we came from wherever we came from, Russia, Romania, so we were Zuckerman. We were Zuckerman. And I know that's correct because whoever then went from the Yiddish to the English wasn't really that good at spelling. Hence, Sugerman. That's the spelling of my name. What can I tell you? In the time, however, of the Gemara, no last names. Last names is a recent phenomena. Right? Maybe 17th, 18th century, maybe they started with last names, but it's a recent phenomena. So in other words, so on my loan document, without a last name, so who did I borrow from? I borrowed from Yosef, from Aaron, from Shimon. And you go into town, and lo and behold, there's somebody else with that name. Okay, now, no picture on the loan document, no stamp on the, in other words, all you got now is a name, and a couple of people in that town share the same name. So, and not only that, same name, same father's name. So now what do? You're really stuck. I know this sounds, it sounds crazy, but, okay, just let's deal with the case at hand. Okay, so you're stuck now. And now you're in a town and the loan says, Yosef and Shimon owes me money. And you go into town and there are two people who positively identify themselves as Yosef ben Shimon. And each Yosef ben Shimon still looks at you and says, well, it's not me, you know, it's the other Yosef ben Shimon. Now, I know one of them is lying and there's a lot of unethical behavior going on over here. But again, just focus on the following. V'lachu sad debeshutfus. Let's say, oh, this is interesting. Let's say now the two of them go into a partnership. Okay? And with the name of the partnership, how are they going to list themselves on Sunbiz? So, you're right. Yosef ben Shimon squared. Okay? But they... And they go into a partnership. And so now the creditor looks and says, Oh yes. Okay, now we're cooking. Now we're cooking. Because I know that as sole proprietors, I could not go after each one of them because each one of them could keep pushing me away. But now they're in a partnership. And so what Rav Yirmiya says is that once they go into a partnership, Ba'chov Gova Osa Mehem. So now I can go and I can make a claim against that joint venture. Interesting. Yeah, I know you're trying to compare this with what we how we view partnerships now. Okay, so you know much more than I. You're an expert at this. I'm not. But anyway, and what you're basically now going to say is, look, my friend, I know that I have a claim against Yosef ben Shimon. And I also know that now you and Yosef, the other Yosef ben Shimon, went into a partnership. And so therefore, you have a land that is jointly owned. Obviously, the claim can only be made against that particular partnered deal. But still, either I have a claim against you, and so therefore I'm taking against you, I have a claim against your friend, but you and your friend now are joint venture over this property, and so therefore I can go after the joint venture. And essentially what Rav Yirmiya is saying is, how do I know that? Because of our mission, our sugya. Because dad dies now before day 30 was up, and so now the outstanding obligation is not against dad, but it's against those kids. Those kids have a joint estate that's before the estate is divided, and so therefore what the Kohen can now say is, look, I don't know which one of you is a Bechor, I don't know who I have the claim against, but there is joint property, I can go after the joint property. Rav Yirmiya says, that's what we could deduce from our Mishnah. Okay, so Amar Rava. Rava, it's going to sound like Rava totally rejects this idea. Amar Rava. Rebbe says, look, when you have a lien against property, you know what that property is? It's a guarantor. Right? It really, that's all property is. It just guarantees a loan. And you know how guarantors operate? A guarantor can be no better than the principal himself. Meaning, mi ika midi dilidide lo matzi tavale ula arev matza tavale. Because you now have arrived at the most bizarre situation where I can go after the guarantor even though I don't have really a claim against the principal. Meaning, the Kohen over here is going after one of the brothers and says to that one brother, I'm coming after you. And the brother says, well, you don't have a claim against me because I don't know if I'm the Bechor and you don't know if I'm the Bechor. And now he and his brother go into a joint venture or... let's just deal with our Mishnah. They get an estate, which they now share before they divided it. And now he can go after the property. Rebbe says it doesn't make sense. If I can't go after the principal, I can't go after the guarantor. Meaning the guarantor can't be stronger than the borrower. No, it's not a function of order. It's a function of a guarantor is just simply your second option of who to turn to if there's a default of the principal. But if I don't even have a claim against the principal, I really can't have a claim against the guarantor. And land in this case is your guarantor. That's the lien. That's where the lien is on the obligation. But if I can't go after the borrower, I can't go after the guarantor. He's going to need to give a whole new explanation of the Mishnah. Meaning he's just not happy with Rav Yirmiya's explanation because it can't be. Can't be that I can't go after the principal himself, but I can go after his land. Just it doesn't conceptually doesn't work. Vatanan, just give me 1 second. Hamavitz chaver al yidei arev lo yifram in arev. So the Mishnah Baba Basra, the whole sugi of arevus is at the very tail end of Baba Basra. 176 blot of Baba Basra, and only when you get to like the last 3 or 4 blot, then and only then do you deal with arevus. Do you deal with the laws of guarantor? The Mishnah says that if there's a guarantor, a cosigner of a loan, you can't go after the cosigner. It's a funny Mishnah. What does that Mishnah mean? It only means that you don't go after the guarantor first. First go to the borrower, the principal borrower of the loan, and if he defaults, then you could turn to the guarantor. But you see, there's a very specific pecking order. First borrower, than the guarantor. But that means that the guarantor is really just a replacement of the borrower. He stands in the place of the borrower. If I can't go after the borrower, I can't go after the guarantor. Meaning if I don't have a claim against the borrower, I don't have a claim against the guarantor. So, Rav says to Rav Yirmiyah, I just can't conceptually agree with you. That the Kohen doesn't really have a claim against one of the brothers, but if they have a joint property, i.e. their estate, he can go after the estate. Conceptually, it doesn't make sense. Okay. So Rav says, allow me please to give a totally new pshat in our Mishnah. Dad dies after day 30. Now, let's make sure that we understand. Okay, this is going to get a little complicated, but we'll navigate. I'll try to navigate. Dad dies after day 30. Now that means that there was an obligation, a very definitive obligation from the father to pay the Kohen 5 salai. Okay. And then God forbid, Rahman al-Islam, dad dies. Now that means that there is an estate, and that estate obviously is going to represent security of that obligation. Right? So there's an account payable coming from the estate to the Kohen. Okay. So far so good? Now, Elam Rav Alolam Shemes Lachar Lam Yom. Now look, if the estate is a large estate and it can more than pay the outstanding loan, so then the estate has to pay the outstanding loan. Meaning, there's a lien against the estate. The Kohen has a lien against the estate. And so therefore the Kohen can come and collect. And so there would be no discussion. That's not even open for discussion. The case of our Mishnah is a very specific case. The entire estate amounted to 5 selah. Okay. Dad, unfortunately, did not die a wealthy individual. And Dad now leaves all but 5 selahim. And to break the news even worse to the kids, those 5 selahim are owed to the Kohen. Okay. This is not going to go well. Okay, so give me a moment now to explain what's about to go on right now. Okay. How do we view an estate? Okay, this is a good broad discussion about probate law, basic probate law in halacha. How do we view an estate? So again, I have no idea, no concept of how this works in the American legal system. So I just am going to deal with the Gemara and the Halacha, which is basically my job anyway. So the Halacha is unclear about how to view an estate. Meaning, the dad dies and he leaves an estate to the children, and then the children are going to end up dividing it. Okay, either they are yorshim, they inherit the estate. Well, that's pretty obvious, right? Meaning that the part that they actually obtain was their rightful piece of the pie, or their rightful piece of the estate from the very beginning. But when dad dies, he just leaves this big, huge estate, and we don't know which one's going to go to which, and there's going to be a discussion of if it's not spelled out in the will, there's going to be discussion of who gets which portion, and there may even be a little bit of quarreling going on in terms of who's going to get which portion. Okay, but when I land on the part that I received, that's considered my estate from the very beginning. What concept are we going to use in order to explain this? It's a concept called breira. Meaning, we're going to say that the part that I land with, hovra lemafreya. That retroactively, we're going to say that that's the part that was always due to me. Even when dad dies, that was the part that was going to get to me. Just needed clarification. Okay, we clarified it. That part now is mine. But that is just simply nothing more than just a Yerusha, part of the original estate. That's option A. Option B is that no. We don't subscribe to the concept of Brera. But rather what we're going to do is we're going to fight it out. I'd like this land, and the other brother says, no, I like this land. And basically we're going to barter. Meaning, I'll tell you what, you'll take that land, and in exchange for that, I'll take this land. And you'll fight it out, and you'll barter it out, and obviously, you're bartering with, you know, other pieces of the other shares of the estate, but basically, it's not a Yerusha, but you know what it is? It's a purchase. It's a purchase. Meaning that when I end up with the piece that I got, I actually didn't inherit it, but I acquired it as a lokeach. Okay. Now, what is the correct way to look at it? So this is subject to a debate. Meaning, if you're a subscriber of the concept of Breira, so the part that you received is considered a Yerusha. If you're not a subscriber to Breira, so the part that you receive now is considered a Lekucha. You're considered a purchaser. Okay. Now, Rav Asi, he actually goes with option C. You didn't think there'd be another option, did you? He goes with option C. Rav Asi says, I don't know. Meaning, I am totally up in the air of whether we subscribe to Breira or we do not subscribe to Breira. And so therefore, Rav Asi says, I look at every Yerusha as part Yerusha, part Lekuchos. Right? Mechza Yorshin, Mechza Lekuchos. Rav Asi kind of just splits it right down the middle. It's a funny compromise. Right? Hard, difficult to understand how that works exactly. It should be either one or the above, and Rav Asi just simply says, I look at it as both. Okay? I don't fully understand Rav Asi's position, but at least I can articulate it to a certain degree. Now, udekuli alma. Now, so supposition number one, we subscribe to Rav Asi, everybody. Rav Asi's an Amora. Not everyone agrees to Rav Asi, but let's just assume right now that everyone subscribes to Rav Asi. Okay. Number two, udekuli alma milva ksuva b'tora lav kiksuva b'shtar damya. Okay. Number two, this obligation that dad had to give the coin 5 salayim, was it written in a note? The answer is kind of yes. That note is called the Torah. Meaning the Torah says, you now, because you had a firstborn child, need to give the coin 5 salayim. Okay, is that considered a documented loan?
Yep.
Subject to a debate. another machlokas. So we're going to assume right now that it's lav kiksuva b'shtar. We're going to say that even though the Torah demands that you pay the money, we're going to call it an undocumented loan, an undocumented obligation, even though the Torah wrote it down, but you didn't write it down as a IOU. This is part of the Torah's legislation. You're on the hook, but we're going to call it an undocumented note.
But it's like the sugar closer, it's like not to any specific coin. It's not a legal...
Right, understood. Understood. It is an issue. I saw on the notes a number of people discuss that issue. Basically, we look at the coin, at the entire body of the coin as a person, as an entity, right? It's like our corporation's people. You know that we look at the coin as a corporate entity. Lav kiksuva b'shtar dami. Udekuli ama isluhu derav papa dam rav papa malva apeh govem min ayorshim ve'ena govem min alukuchos. Another supposition, I believe this is going to be our third one. Another supposition is like this, is that if you have a milva alpeh, a loan, an oral loan, not supported by a document, an undocumented loan, you can collect undocumented loans from Yorshim, but not from Lekuchos. Look, whenever you buy land, this is always true, universally, whenever you buy land, if there was a lien outstanding against that land, so now the lien holder, right, is now going to go after you. Even though, what are you coming after me for? Okay, but he has a lien against that property. But liens are only created with a loan document, with a note. If you don't have shtar, if you don't have that loan, if you don't have the note, so he's not a lien holder, so therefore he cannot come after you. Rav Papa is of the opinion that if you have an undocumented loan, a milva al peh, so you can't go after the purchaser, but you can go after your yoresh. Okay. Let's assume everyone agrees. Okay? Milva apeh govim in yoresh, mena govim in lekuchos. V'hacha. And so now, everyone with the number of positions that we're assuming, we're going to assume that when you inherit money, you are part yoresh, part lokeach. We're going to assume that that a loan written and an obligation written in the Torah is not considered a documented loan. We're going to assume that an undocumented loan can be collected from the Yarish and not from the Lokeach. Okay? All these are assumptions that we're making. Every point that I just made is subject to a debate, but the Gemara says, let's assume points A, B, and C. Okay. Now that we've assumed all those points, now the Gemara says, Watch. What's now? Now we're going to explain the machlokas of our Mishnah between Rab Meir and Rab Yehuda. And the Gemara says, "V'hacha bechamish v'lo bechati chamish kamiflegi." You have an outstanding obligation now to give the Kohen 5 salaim. What if you don't have 5? What if you only have 3? Is there any mitzvah to give anything below 5? The Gemara now is suggesting that's the machlokas. So funny, of all the things that we could argue and debate about, the Gemara now is suggesting that's the machlokas of the Mishnah between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, as to whether or not giving the Kohen anything less than 5 is a mitzvah. Rav Meir savar chamesh v'lo chatzi chamesh. Rav Meir says, no, nothing less than 5 is going to be considered a mitzvah. Now dad died, and what did dad leave as the estate? 5 salayim. Now, each one of them is going to be dividing, and each one of them is now going to be getting 2.5. Okay. But remember now, of that 2.5, how do we view it? So the assumption that we're going into this discussion is, like Rav Papa, that half of the money I inherited is inheritance, and the other half of the money that I inherited is lokeach. I purchased that money. Huh? Right. Like Rav Asi. We're also going to assume, like the Gemara said on the top of the Amud, that the obligation is not documented. And we're also going to assume that someone who has an undocumented obligation outstanding against you can come and collect only from Yerusha, not from Lekuchos. Oh, and so now he's coming after you, and yes, he is in fact entitled, but only to half of what you have. So only to of your 2.5, only 1.25. So now he's coming after you, and all you can give him is 1.25. And he's going to come after your brother, and your brother can only give him 1.25. So he's only walking away with 2.5. Not a mitzvah. Rav Meir is going to argue, because you simply don't have enough to give him 5, it's therefore not a mitzvah. Wait, give me a second. Yeah. Let me just finish the Gemara's thought, and then I'll stop. I'll pause. Rav Yehuda savar chamesh v'afilu chatzi chamesh, and Rav Yehuda says no. Rav Yehuda says even if there is a mitzvah, even if you don't have the full 5, even if the obligation is only satisfied partially, there still is a mitzvah, and so therefore Rav Yehuda says that you're going to end up giving the kohen. Granted, you're only going to give the kohen, not the full 5. Because it's an undocumented loan, and he can only come after the Yerusha, and the Yerusha is only going to be half of the 5, only 2.5 of the 5, but still there's a mitzvah to give him 2.5. Let me just finish the thread. Ihachi Rav Yehuda Omer Nischayv Nechas Nischayv Gavra Mibayelei. So the Gemara says, you know, it's first of all, it's a little complex, but that never bothers the Gemara. Gemara is always fine with complicated. But you know, says the Gemara, you know what the problem is? The Lashna Mishnah. The Mishnah says nischayv nechasim. That's somewhat misleading. That's not really the truth. Nischayv gavra mi bayelei. Now the Mishnah is not going to use the word gavra, but you understand the obligation is primarily on the person, not on the nechasim. V'o tanya Rav Yehuda Amar Achin shechalkim yesha sar zela zuz lezev asar zuz lezev chayavim ve'el na peturim. So, and not only that, but we have a brisa, and the brisa paints almost the same case, but the Braisa here actually gives us our numbers. And the Braisa says each one received 10. Maya sar zuzlazeh v'asar zuzlazeh, ilema ben dirusha ben lekuchos, v'chamesh v'afilu chatzvi chamesh, ihachi ma'ir yasar, v'afilu batzim yasar enami. Look, if Rav Yehuda would allow even less than 5 to be given to the Kohen, why was the Braisa so specific of saying 10 for this one and 10 for that one? Clearly, the Braisa was anticipating that if you're not going to be able to give the Kohen less than 5, then you're not going to give the Kohen anything. So the Gemara says, once you know this Braisa, clearly everybody, both Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir, are both of the opinion that if you're giving the Kohen less than 5, that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to give the Kohen 5 and nothing less than 5. And if you don't have, so then you're not going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah. Ella. So the Gemara therefore says, we're going to now try it a different way. Dekulei alma chamesh v'lo chatzi chamesh. So the Gemara suggests, look, everyone agrees that it's 5 or nothing. And over here, you know what the issue is? Exactly where we started this whole discussion. Meaning, how do I view a Yerusha? Is a Yerusha in its entirety? Meaning, Breira? Meaning, that which you have in your hand is the estate? And we're not considered Lukuchos? Or do we subscribe to the view of Ravasi? Half and half. Okay.
My question is that since one of the two surviving children is the Bechor, right?
Right.
Why isn't he obligated in full?
If we knew which one was, so then you're 100% correct. The whole case.
Two sons, we don't know which one is
the whole case starts where we don't know which one is the Bechor, which is what prompted the whole discussion, because the Gemara says each one can turn to the Kohen and say, look, I'm Motzei Mechavero. I don't even know if I'm the Bechor. You can't come after me.
If they are a sibling and they decide to do the contact between them to get one of them two portion, then as soon as that's done,
if they go through the process of harsha'ah, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting. You may be going back to Rav Yirmiyah's point, which the Gemara didn't like, which is even when they joint, when they combine forces, I still can't go after them. Right.
He'll have to give all five. Right. The other one will be left with more money. Than
right. Okay, so that was a tough discussion of the Gemara, because there are a lot of variables and a lot of points of contention. But still, the basic idea behind the Gemara is that that really the Kohen cannot go after each one individually, and it's just now a question of how to view that Yerusha, which is subject to to a number of points of view. No, the Gemara, it's funny, the Gemara landed on when you shuffle the deck, the Gemara landed on the point that everybody agrees that there's no mitzvah to give less than five. It's either you have five or there's no mitzvah.
Can they have a future obligation?
Yeah, I guess if you get money later.
Right? I wonder the same thing myself.
Why not?
Well, because I'll tell you why not. I'm not sure, but if I was going to make an argument, because it's really the father's obligation. It's not their obligation. I understand. So, but it's just a lien against the estate. It's the estate now who's obligated, not them.
One second. There's no estate. The son's obligated to redeem themselves eventually.
Right.
None of the estate.
Right, but that's a rollover from the father. The son's obligation is not a new obligation.
No, but if the father doesn't do it, the son has nothing to do with whose estate.
Right, but okay. I hear your point.
The sons redeem themselves, right?
Huh? Correct. We'll learn later on. If the father failed to do so, it becomes the son's responsibility. Right. But in this particular case, the dad left an estate.
That was the father's obligation.
Right. 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 Okay. Igi Damaskin La'Seifa. Now, the next bit of Gemara is really just a. It's a retread, right? Ika Damasnila, meaning you know it's going to be the same discussion, but the starting point is going to be a somewhat different starting point, and that is the Seifa. Nischaiva Nechasin. Where the Mishnah goes on to say, Rav Yehuda's position is that the Nechasim are obligated. Right? Okay. And now, here we go. I'm going to go through this quickly. When did the father die? The father died after 30 days. The Gemara says, well, if dad died after day 30, so then there's an obligation on the property. So how would Reb Meir say that he doesn't have to pay? So the Gemara says, dad died within the first 30 days. But if dad died within the first 30 days, so that means that there's no obligation on the father. The obligation is strictly on the children, but each child doesn't know if he's the firstborn. So they're going to just simply turn to the Kohen and say, look, I'm not the firstborn. Why are you coming after me? So I'm Rav Yirmiyah Zosam Erish, Neyosa Ben Shimon, Shayu Biyarachas, Valakachacha Mem Sad Mechavero, Bachov Govim Mimena Darmala, Ibi Ditcha Masikna, Manasa Ditcha Kashakina, Vibachavacha Masikna, Mishtabele Mikamiditcha. And so the Gemara says, well, maybe we can now look at Rav Yirmiyah and say Rav Yirmiyah would like to argue that based on what we just saw in the Gemara, we can conclude that if I have a loan outstanding against a Yosef Ben Shimon, And there are two of them in town, and I don't know, and I can't prove which one is the actual borrower, but once they have a joint venture, so then I can go after their joint venture, that property, that joint property. So and then to that Rava says, I don't understand. If I can't go after them individually, so then I can go after a property that's owned in partnership between the two of them. That property is only a guarantor. And if I can't go after the principal, I certainly can't go after the guarantor. And then what you're going to do is now you're going to go back. I don't know what minute of the tape I started the whole discussion on, but then you'll go play back the tape to where then the discussion then continued in the Gemara previously, and the Gemara says v'chulu kalish nakama. Now just simply follow the thread all the way to where the Gemara ended. Okay, so and you'll just go back to the tape, you'll hit play from that point forward, and you'll get the rest of the sugya. Mishnah shtei nashim shelo bichru v'yaldu shnei zecharim. You have two wives. Neither of them gave birth first, and so now they're both pregnant, and they both gave birth, and they both presented to you two firstborn children. Mazel tov and mazel tov. No sein yud salim lekohen. So you got to give 10 salim to the kohen.
Is that the same time that they
were born? Yeah, let's say. Im lekohen echad nasan yachzer lo chamesh salim. Now, Rahman al-Salam, one of them died within the first 30 days. So that means that that child was an Eiffel, which means that you had no obligation to give the 5 Salam, so you can demand a refund from the Kohen. Okay? I know. Funny. Okay, so the... right, because you didn't know.
The Im...
Huh? He shouldn't have given before the 30 days. He gave. However, if he gave prematurely... And he gave one 5 stela to one coin, another 5 stela to another coin, and he didn't specify on behalf of which son he gave. So now each coin can rightfully retain that 5 stela that was given to him. Zachar unikeva, oshnei zacharim unikeva. Let's say the two wives gave birth to male and female, and again, it was just what a soap opera. We don't know which one gave birth to which child, but doesn't matter. Meaning, one of them gave birth to a firstborn, the father is on the hook to give 5 salim. Oshnei zecharim unikeva, or let's say, what comes out of that room are two boys and a girl. So one of them had twins. And again, you don't know what happened exactly, but here's what you have to conclude, absolutely. One of them first gave birth to a boy. You go through your permutations in your head and you realize that one of them had, at least one of them gave birth to a boy. No, say chamishlam lekohen. Shtei nekevas v'zachar. What if what came out of that room are two girls and a boy? Oh, shnei zachar v'shtei nekevas are two boys and two girls. Ain kan lekohen klum. Kohen gets nothing. Okay. Yeah, because one possible permutation is that each wife of yours gave birth to girl boy, and the other girl boy. And again, you don't know how much the mechaveru alavaraya. The awkward place to stop. We'll stop here in the Mishnah. We'll take it up right tomorrow morning from this first case, from the next case of the Mishnah.